Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kesource family production. In this episode, we discuss building a foundation of success, loving the game, and March Madness. Our guest today is Coach Alan Major. Alan is a college basketball coach, speaker, and author. Alan has coached at UNC Charlotte, The Ohio State University, Xavier University, University of the Pacific, and California Lutheran University. Coach Major currently lives in Indianapolis and is seeking a new coaching gig. Alan Major, a veteran leader both on and off the court, has played a key role in successful programs for over two decades. His philosophy is based on empowerment, professionalism, and motivation, and he has helped shape scores of young men and colleagues alike toward personal and collective victories. Whether as a coach, a speaker, or a leader, one thing remains unchanged: his relentless drive and clarity of vision. With Alan's experience on the court, he loves sharing his story, journey, and life lessons from the game of basketball. We are super excited to have Alan join us on this podcast, so let's get it going. Alan, welcome to the Entrepreneur Perspectives Podcast. It's great to have you.
Hey, Eric, what's going on? Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. This is a hot time of year with the Final Four. When we record this, Final Four is coming up on Saturday night, which is crazy. I know you've been following the basketball tournament. You've been at the basketball tournament. But I want to take a quick step back. College basketball, coaching. Yeah. When did you know you wanted to become a basketball coach?
I would say I was 13 years old, and there was a funny incident that happened in my backyard when I was a kid. You know, I was always I had a court in the backyard and a basketball hoop attached to the garage, you know, the whole routine. And I was always the younger guy playing with older guys. You know, they'd be dunking on the rim and they'd be bent, you know, whenever I'd come back home, I'd tell guys would be out there playing. And so the older guys kind of taught me how to play. Make good passes, take a good shot. Don't do things, you know, outside your character on the court. And so as I got older, I taught, you know, younger kids that would come by, you know, a year or two younger than me, how to play. So one time we're playing 3-on-3 and it's me and a few other kids. And we basically have a little quick huddle and it's game point. And basically I tell this one little kid, his name is DeJuan Washington. And I say, hey, DeJuan, you know, I'm going to pass the ball over here. I'm going to come set a pick for you. You know, you come off of me. If you're open, shoot it. So, boom, boom, boom. He makes a shot. And it wasn't like, you know, angels sang from the heavens or anything like that. But it just kind of hit me like, hey, that was really cool what just happened. And it was one of those things that maybe it just planted a seed in me that whenever – I finished playing, you know, every guy thinks he's going to play forever until he's not. So I just knew that I always wanted basketball to be a part of my life at that point. I didn't know how it would play out. I was hoping it would be coaching, but I think that was like a kind of a pivotal experience that at the time was probably seeming insignificant, but ended up being pretty special.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It becomes like your aha moment to have that type of thing. And we've all been out there, right? I think I've pointed directions when I played, you know, driveway basketball and told people to go in certain directions. I don't think it went as well as probably what you just went through when you were 13 years old. But we love the stories of people when they were coming up and they realized at that time, like, man, this is something I want to be a part of my life, like you said. When we spoke a few months ago, you told me this incredible story. You turned out to be an assistant basketball coach at The Ohio State University. And before that, you had been on campus in St. John's Arena, and you had, I think at your time, your girlfriend there. I want you to carry that story from here, because I think this is one of those stories that I think a lot of people need to hear.
Yeah, so I was an assistant coach. My first job was at California Lutheran University. And I'm not personally Lutheran, but, you know, I went there and I knew the head coach. And so probably this would have been the summer of, I would say right around 1994, in that range. And I was dating a girl that was in graduate school, like I was. at Cal Lutheran, but she was from Newark, Ohio, and Newark was right outside of Columbus, not far away. So I went back to visit her, and we met, you know, on campus one day at Ohio State. We decided we're going to hang out and, you know, hang out on campus. And this is obviously dating myself here, but rollerblades were a big deal at the time. So she has the bright idea that we're going to go rollerblading all over campus. And she rollerbladed. I spent most of the day picking up rocks out of my knees and picking myself up off the ground. But it was fun. So anyway, we end up walking into St. John Arena, which is a historic, you know, arena on that campus. And so we walk into the arena, and my mouth just drops, and I'm looking around. And ironically, when I was a manager at Purdue working with Gene Cady, you know, you go all around the Big Ten, and Ohio State was one of my favorite opposing places to go. So I had been in that arena before. And so we're standing in the doorway of the arena, and we're looking around, and I just blurted out. I said, wow, this would be an awesome place to coach someday. And literally without hesitation, my girlfriend at the time, Melissa was her name. She says, oh, don't worry, you will. And it was, you know, it's one of those things like, yeah, you know, well, you're a little biased, obviously, when saying that about me. And so, fast forward about 10 years later, 2004, when Thad took the job, we were at Xavier, and it happened really late. And unfortunately, Jim O'Brien, the previous coach, had gotten let go at Ohio State. So it was, you know, literally like the first week of July, the day before recruiting, when we got hired at Ohio State. And I remember the first chance I got to get to my office, and the first phone call I made was to her. And I said, you'll never guess where I'm sitting right now. And she goes, where? I said, well, you remember us rollerblading a long time ago on a certain campus, and, you know, you saying that I would end up coaching there someday. And there's this hushed kind of silence, you know, before she says, no way, on the other end of the phone. And so it was just kind of cool that literally a 10-year span, something went from being spoken literally into the air and coming to life 10 years later. So pretty amazing deal.
Yeah, that's your movie right there. I mean, I think you wrote the script. It's one of those things. I mean, it gives me chills, and I wasn't there. But I mean, those stories are amazing, and it is like a movie. And that's just, and then you fade to black, right? And then off you go. But you didn't fade to black at that.
I will only make it a movie if it doesn't show me falling down on rollerblades.
I mean, that's the comedy part of it. We're gonna need that clip.
Right.
But the good news is it didn't fade to black. Your story kept on going. And as you know, my parents met at Ohio State. I'm a huge Ohio State fan.
Yeah.
So I remember this well. The Ohio State basketball program, like you had just said, it kind of fallen on hard times. They had some success. Jim O'Brien got into the Final Four. And then things didn't go as well, right? And you guys come there,
sure,
and you can't go to the NCAA tournament. And I don't think you're having the season. You weren't really had a lot. You didn't have a lot of expectations this time. And then in comes undefeated,
right,
if I remember correctly, Illinois, who is going to become, no matter what happens, going to be the number one seed in the NCAA tournament, the favorite to win the NCAA tournament. They come into your stadium, come into your house, and tell us that story.
Well, you know, it was amazing. They were 29-0. It was the final Big Ten game of the regular season. They had crunched us in Champaign at the first game of the conference season. And so, you know, they had a unbelievable team, Luther Head, D. Brown, James Augustine, Roger Powell. They were just phenomenal. And you know, we couldn't go to the tournament that year. You know, the Ohio State had self-imposed a penalty based on the violation from the previous staff. So our whole hashtag that year was pride, because we couldn't play for any type of carrot, you know, the Big Ten championship, or, you know, in terms of even that, had we got to compete in the conference tournament, but we weren't even eligible to go to the NCAAs had we even won it. So that game, in a sense, was kind of like our NCAA tournament game, you know, in a nutshell. And so, but our whole year, our hashtag for that team was pride. And, you know, since we can't play for anything external, that team had to play for everything internal. And so, you know, it's a, we're down by two, and we have a huddle towards the end of the game, and coach literally sits down and asks the guys, hey, you know, we can go for the tie, or you want to go for the win? And every guy in the huddle, you know, just screams out, hey, let's go for it. And so we had a play called Winner. And in a nutshell, it was we ran a guy around a double screen, and one of the guys in the double screen kind of pinned in for his buddy that was in the double screen, and Matt Sylvester popped back and shot a three right in front of our bench. It seemed like the ball was in the air forever. You know, it's one of those moments where time slows down. It's going 100 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden time is going 2 miles an hour. And so, you know, it's like, all right, someday this ball is going to drop, and it's either going to hit the rim or it's going to go in. And, you know, lo and behold, he drains it, and we ended up winning the game. Just Gus Johnson and CBS did the call. You can Google it. It's an amazing finish. And, you know, stormed the court and the whole nine yards. But that kind of set the tone for what we wanted to build, because Illinois was what we were wanting to become. So we, that win kind of helped us define ourselves by, hey, you know, sure, this is a conference opponent, but they were the number one team in the country. And we eventually wanted to put ourselves in that same light as they were at the time. So I think it validated us. It validated us to future recruits, you know, the Conleys and Odens and Daquan Cooks and David Lighties and, you know, all the guys that eventually end up coming to Evan Turner's down the line. You know, one recruiting class kind of validates another. But that win really, you know, just helped us plant our feet and say, hey, you know, we really believe we can do something special here.
Absolutely. Well, and you're talking about, you know, it's funny. You said you can pull us up on YouTube. We're in our little, what we call our studio. It's our conference room, but we have it up on YouTube right now. And these guys are watching it that are in here with me as we record this podcast. I remember it so well. And it is amazing, but it's the pride part. And then when we tie this thing into business, it's building that foundation for future success is what we look at, because you can't win the championship every year. You can't win it on every single play, but you can set yourself up with small successes. And, you know, this is not a small success by any stretch, right? But this is a big success. And this was a big moment for you that catapulted you to the next level that led to, like you said, all those other things. But in business, we see it all the time. Like, just go out there and get the win today. Go make that big moment happen. Yeah. And remember that down the road, that what got you to where you are when you are having even more success, right?
Yeah, no, it always comes back to that. You're absolutely right. And that's what we were doing. I mean, we had just gotten hired, and that was year one of us building a business. I mean, that it just happened to be in the form of a college basketball program. But the ingredients are the same in terms of how you conduct yourself each day, how you build a culture and piece it together, and not just make sure that culture isn't just words on a wall or in a hallway or things that get passed out or put on wristbands. You know, it's got to be lived out. And I think that's the most powerful thing about whether it's a team or business or anything is culture is great written down, but it's most powerful when it's lived out.
That's right. And so what I hear from you is this passion for the game, this love for the game of basketball. And you've talked with us about players that you've had that have played for you that either loved the game or didn't love the game. Two players you identified, and this isn't just the only two. You had many, but we were just talking about the team, the success that you had when Aaron Kraft and John Diebler and some of those guys were there, that they had this love for the game of basketball. And I think it's obvious that in order to have incredible success with whatever you're doing, you have to love what you're doing. And it's like you said, you can write it down, but you have to live it. It can't be manufactured. Like, it has to be real. Like, tell me why loving the game is so important. Maybe, like, why they, Aaron Kraft and John Diebler and other players, succeeded as a result for just loving the game so much.
Yeah, you know, Aaron arrived right when I left to go to Charlotte, but I was around them a lot in the recruiting process and, you know, watching them play AAU a ton. And then obviously got to be around John for 3 years. But yeah, those two guys in particular, but you know, obviously a bunch of other guys that came through there, you know, that were, you know, you start out maybe under the radar a little bit in high school. Evan Turner, for instance, you know, ranked, you know, was a late top 100 guy and ends up being a number two draft pick. But they all kind of had that love for the game, is what you're talking about, Eric. And I think the big thing, and, you know, we look for it in recruiting. I think businesses should look for it in hiring, is people that enjoy what they do and have a true love for it, enjoy their craft. Because in college basketball in particular, you know, with school and, you know, the basketball side of it, it's a very demanding lifestyle. You know, guys basically has two jobs. And so the ability to manage your time and be responsible and do all those things at a high level, you know, requires an incredible commitment. Well, usually it's very hard to be totally committed to something unless you love it. And so the thing I've always, you know, said is that when a guy loves the game, you can't ask him to do too much. And not only that, is because that love for the game, it's going to, most of the time, 99% of the time, he's not going to let anything get in the way of him getting to do what he loves, whether it's a girl or a party or a drug or a bottle or any type of off the court stuff. They just, you know, guys that love the game just can't imagine not being able to do it. And so as a result, they conduct themselves in a slightly different way, and that, you know, they almost become, whether they become pros from an NBA perspective, they kind of conduct themselves like professionals, whether they become pros or not. And I think that's a huge distinction there. And you should probably see it in the business world, I'm sure. You know, there's people that are pros at what they do in terms of maybe collecting a high salary and, you know, they're from a status perspective, but you can always be professional in how you conduct yourself and the way you go about your business. And that's what John was like. That's what we knew Aaron was going to be like that before he even arrived to campus. And so Evan Turner was like that just in terms of his commitment to develop and grow. And you know, Greg Oden, Mike Conley had that, even though they were on campus for 9 months as one and dones. You know, they still had an incredible commitment to what they did each day. I mean, those two were literally the last two guys to leave the gym on a Final Four team as freshmen every day. So I know I didn't mean to drag on that very long, but I mean, I think that just giving it some background in terms of why that is and what makes those guys tick. And so I think it's so important in recruiting to look for guys like that. And I think, you know, in addition, from a business management perspective, it's important to find people that love what they do and how, you know, make sure they really enjoy and have that commitment to their craft. No pun intended.
No, and I think it's great that you did carry on about it because it shows the importance you have towards it. When we brought in John Priori, who you've talked to before, you know, what we said to him is, if you don't like it here, don't be here. But if you like it here, this isn't even going to feel like work to you. You're just going to want to do the work. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. You know, you got to have balance in your life, right? And alignment in everything that you're doing.
Exactly.
But if you're doing these things, I could imagine when you talk about Mike Conley and Greg Oden, when they're staying at the gym and they're the last ones there, they're not like hating every moment. Yeah, sometimes it's not going to have the best day, but they're loving what they do. So they don't care about being there extra hours.
Exactly. So, as a result, it's so easy from a coaching perspective to develop, you know, great partnerships, you know, with guys like that, because, you know, they're always meeting you in the middle. Sometimes they'll come across in your line and they'll be waiting for you before you get to the middle. But guys that maybe don't have that commitment level, you can always feel like you're trying to drag or pull them. And, you know, you're trying to make them want something more than they want it. And so that's when it gets to be challenging. So, but that's the joy of not every guy that plays college basketball loves it now. Let's be honest. Let's be real. But the ones that do, they really ignite you as a coach, because that's when it's really special.
That's right. So a lot of the players that you've mentioned, they had a lot of talent. They had a lot of ability. They showed up ready to play. And there's also raw talent, right, where you see somebody, and again, this isn't, we're talking about basketball, but this is also in business, where someone has the potential to be someone great, and someone doesn't see it, but then you see it, and you're like, you want to make this happen. So you have a story about Michael Olowokandi, who became the number one pick in the NBA draft, where he was seen by one school, or not seen, but he was heard about by one school, and they didn't believe it. He ended up on your campus at a smaller school, right? And the rest is history.
Yeah. Michael Olowokandi, was I started coaching at the University of Pacific in 1995. And, when I got there, I heard one of the assistants talking about some kid from London that he was talking to, a Nigerian 7-footer. And, as I'm on the job, in this ensuing weeks, it really starts to sound like, hey, this kid's going to come to campus. And Michael's dad was an ambassador for the Nigerian government in London. And so Michael was going to boarding school in London and, playing club ball, which is the equivalent of, intramurals. And so he had reached out to some American schools. I think he had called Duke. He got an answer machine. He called Georgetown, got someone on the phone. They didn't believe he was 7 feet, so he got mad and hung up the phone because they wanted to send a scout to verify it. And he didn't like that, and so he hung up. And so he, as he's flipping through that green booklet, American Colleges and Universities, he gets to the P's, and his thumb kind of just goes right to the beginning of the P's randomly. And right at the top, PA, University of Pacific, he calls. So, he ends up coming to campus. Coach Thomason, my boss at the time, Bob Thomason, who's a fantastic coach, who's now retired from Pacific, but had gone to pick up Michael at the airport. And, the three assistants, we're waiting on campus like it's Christmas Day. Here's a 7-footer that's paying his own way, as a matter of fact. We didn't even have to use a scholarship the first year. And so coach brings Michael to the gym, and, we have a basketball and we're ready to kind of see, what this guy got. The first thing, when he walked into the gym, he's every bit of 7 feet, every bit of it. So now we really think it's Christmas Day, right? Because he's not 6'4", or some scam deal. He's every bit of 7 feet. And, so coach Thomason basically says, "Hey, Michael, why don't you go over to the block? And we'll throw you a few passes. We're not going to burn you down, as a workout. We just want you to do a couple things you're comfortable with." And literally, true story, Michael looked around for a few seconds. And then the three of us assistants looked at each other and we said, "Uh-oh, he doesn't know where the block is." So we walk him over and we say, "Okay, Michael, this is the block. This is where you post up." And so fast forward, literally a block of a chunk of clay, block of granite. And he just, because he didn't have any preconceived basketball experience, I think it just helped him flourish because he had some natural athletic ability. He actually had a decent shooting touch. He just didn't have any idea of how to go through the process of becoming a great post player. And so I'm not going to take credit for it. Actually, one of the assistant coaches who worked with the bigs at the time, a guy named Ron Verlin, spent most of the time with Michael. And we kind of coached him as a committee, but, Ron coached the bigs on a day-to-day basis and just did a phenomenal job to the point where 3 years later, Michael graduates in 1998. He had came over with 3 years eligibility. So he graduates in 1998, averaging 22 points, 11 rebounds, 61% from the field and 3 blocks per game. And he gets announced as the number one pick in the NBA draft. So in 1998. So it just, I think that story of being around him as much as anything taught me about always remaining committed to individual development. for players, because I've seen it from its most raw point to its highest point. I mean, a guy not knowing where the block was to 3 years later shaking David Stern's hand. So that whole experience with him was a great humbling lesson for me as a coach, is never, you know, bail out on a player and just stay with him and be committed to his development. As long as he keeps, you know, coming into the gym and fighting for himself, you keep fighting for him.
That's right. And you've said this before, you have that philosophy of helping the one player, one person at a time. And that resonated so well with us, because that's what we do with our clients. We just got off a phone call with someone and we were talking about, you know, we can say this, but it's actually, do you play it out in real life? And, you know, how can we help this business? How can we help this client right now? And everything else doesn't matter. It's like, we're doing this podcast with you, Alan. You're all that matters right now. Nothing else matters. And that's what you're doing. And when you do it with college students, you know, student athletes, as they call them, right? Or a professional player, whatever level it's at, you're helping that one player. You've talked about it before where you're like, let's put basketball away. Let's put the phones away. Let's go get a soda or a cup of coffee, right? And you just walk the campus with that player, and they're all that matters at that time. And they can talk about whatever's on their mind. Maybe it's not basketball, right? That's something you seem to have focused on quite a bit in your coaching career.
Well, it's important. I think every player needs to know that he's not just a player to you. And I think once a guy understands that he's not just a player, you're not just a coach. He's a young man. You're a grown man. And, you know, you're both in this together to help each other get better. And, you know, as players take their individual strides, whether it's manhood, student, player, you know, the kind of the onus is back on us as coaches to find another way to help them improve. And so that's the essence of what the partnership means. And, you know, that's the purest form of, you know, relational development, right? Is, you know, I get better. I go to a clinic. I get on the phone with NBA guys or European guys, or, you know, I talk to an emotional intelligence person or whatever it is. And if I get one nugget that I can take back and either give to my team or one individual player, you know, he's going to hopefully take that and bleed that into his personality or his own development. And then the kind of the healthy pressure is back on me to go do it again. And then the healthy pressure is back on him to go develop again. And that's, you know, when we talk about helping people, you know, one-on-one like that, I think understanding that it's a partnership. And when a guy knows that he's just not a player to you, that you want to help him grow in every way. And, you know, one of the hashtags we used at Charlotte was max out, you know, when I was coaching there. And the whole point was, you know, we want to try to help them become the absolute best version, as long as they're with us, the best version of themselves as a student, as a player. Sometimes that's an easy conversation because obviously basketball is kind of what drew them there. And then as a man, and getting them, you know, what would it look like if you maxed out in all these three areas? And it's a process, and it's not always easy. You have your, you know, hills, you have your valleys, but as long as a guy knows that you're in it with him and that you care about him and that you want the best for him, and that it's about the next 40 years, right? It's not just about, hey, graduation day, see you later, thanks for the points, rebounds, assists, and you give him a wave. It's about, you know, when he gets his first job or he becomes a pro or, you know, he gets married, he has his first kid. You want to, you know, just still be a part of guys' lives where you get that occasional phone call or text or you get a wedding invite or those kinds of things. So I think when guys know you want to be in it for the long haul as opposed to just for the short term, I think it opens up a world of possibility as far as the you know, their development and just the relationship as a whole.
Yeah, and you're building these relationships, and you're talking about like that Ohio State Illinois game. You're building that foundation not only for the team but for the individual relationships that you're building. And I would imagine when you're on these walks and you look over at the player and he just looks a little bit groggy, maybe from the night before, is that when you ask your famous question of, was it worth it?
Yeah. Well, you know, you hope you don't have to ask that too often, but, guys are going to do, what college guys do. I mean, thank goodness, you know, with me, you know, there was no Twitter or anything else around, you know, back when I was in college, we all had our moments, but I think, that's so important is to be able to have the transparency to ask that question, because I think that in itself, you know, sometimes a guy will maybe gloss over it and tell you the truth, or tell you the truth. He may just say, you know, I just kind of hung out and did this, that, and the third, but just to, you know, to have the courage of a relationship and the transparency to be able to say that, like, hey, you know, make sure that you, yeah, because then you get into taking care of your body and what that's about. So that's, again, that's getting back to maxing out as a player. You're not gonna max out as a player if things at night or the lifestyle or, you know, getting in at 2 a.m. if that becomes important to you, then you're gonna miss out on maxing yourself out. But what's funny is, you know, it gets back to the guys that really love the game. And they want to, you know, very rarely do those guys test the waters at that time of night. You know, they usually are, those guys are getting to bed and they're handling their business, because again, that love for the game just does not, it's not going to allow them to put themselves in a position where they couldn't do what the very thing that they love and enjoy. They can't imagine being away from it. So as a result, they don't do anything to jeopardize it.
Well, it makes sense because I think that question of was it worth it, or if you ask it to yourself, is it worth it before you even do it, is it can be done in anything.
Right.
It could be done with the food that you're about to eat or the decision you're about to make or the client you're about to work with. So, I mean, that question, when you talked to us a few months ago, that stuck with me, and I love that. And, you know, it's just something you can always ask yourself, no matter if you're, you know, an 18-year-old college basketball player or if you're, you know, well into your career. So it's a great thing to live by. And I think these principles just, they parallel each other so well. Now, moving on a little bit into the world of basketball today, March Madness is going on, as we said before. Final Four starts this Saturday. You've been at games. So real quick, though, before we get into maybe some specifics of these games and all that, when you're watching college basketball and you've been around it and you saw it not only 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but today, do you see that the college game has changed? I mean, the one and dones and everything else that's going on, do you see the style of play, the level of play having changed over these last 5 or so years?
Yeah, you know, I think the parity thing is real. You know, I think we've all, this year's probably produced it as much as any, that the parity thing is real. And, obviously the NBA game has gotten, younger, over the, you know, last several years. And, you know, some guys at the mid-major level, especially in college, they have the ability to get older. That's the hardest thing in college basketball to do, is it's hard to get old. And sometimes it's hard to get old via, you know, guys going to the draft. Other times it's hard to get old just because of guys transferring or, you know, mid-major players, you know, with a graduate year that want to go play at a higher level. And all of a sudden, you know, an experienced group loses an 18-point-a-game score to a higher level school. So it's hard to get old, but just, it's been really, fun to watch, to just know that, you know, the whole anything can happen thing has been as lively this year as any, as it ever has. So, obviously the game is reflected a lot of, you know, the NBA in terms of the pick and roll and that type of style. You know, and obviously college basketball's had its challenges, but, just the way the Final Four has played out, to have, you know, a true Cinderella in there. Obviously a team like Michigan, who's done it through consistency, you know, John Beilein, a guy like Jay Wright, who's you know, Villanova's kind of starting to become the new normal in terms of, you know, second Final Four in the last 3 years. And then Kansas, you know, having to remorph themselves literally from a power basketball team to a finesse and driving kick and three-point shooting team. So if you look at each team in the Final Four, their individual journeys are really very cool and kind of reflective of how differently you can do it. You know, Loyola's done it through culture and guys being together. You know, and then obviously we mentioned consistency with Michigan and, you know, John Beilein, like, here we go again. You know, he just kind of finds a way. And his second Final Four, I think the last one might have been 2013, if I'm not mistaken. So, and obviously 14 straight conference titles for Kansas, with a totally different team and a totally different style of play, which cements, if it needed it, as if it did need it, it really did need it. But Bill Self being a Hall of Famer, to the nth degree. And then again, you know, Villanova, just doing it, with guys that have got a ring already, a few guys on their roster. And, you know, they're still all juniors, which is frightening. I mean, Jay Wright's done it in just a really amazing way, just because it's not a team full of McDonald's All-Americans. And they've had guys that have, like Al Green's song, you know, Let's Stay Together. And they've kind of done it in a different way. So each team reflects a different way of doing it in college basketball. And it's really, you know, this four team crew is really, it's pretty refreshing.
Yeah. And I think it's great to have teams that, like you just said, they've done it their own way. And that's in business and anything else. We love to draw those comparisons, of course, but there's no one way to get there. And I think that's really interesting to see that playing out, like you just said, in front of us on national TV for college basketball. And you've got to witness it. So you've been on quite a journey from what I've been following on Twitter these last few weeks traveling. And before that, you did, I think you did a 30-day or 32-day tour perhaps, and you visited college and NBA. And then these past few weeks, I think you're at the Sweet 16. We're at the Villanova, the region that they won. What's been going on in your world?
Yeah, well, the first, I call it the learning journey. That was when I left Charlotte in 2015. So the fall of 2015, I basically took 4 months and visited about 34 schools, or really not just schools, but programs, from Division III all the way up to the San Antonio Spurs. And it wasn't about stealing plays and, you know, I like this ball screen action here. It was more about sampling cultures, sampling, you know, what the vibe is like in each program. And is to this day, one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced, just to go in each gym and after walking out there 2 hours later or 3 days later, depending on how, you know, long I would stay at each place, just getting a dose, a great sample size of like, oh, okay, now I see why they've been good for so many years. So that was the fall of 2015. And, but that journey still resonates because, again, it would be like someone taking a year off in the business world and just bouncing around and visiting various companies of various sizes that have all been successful in their own way and coming away with, you know, again, not so much the technical parts, although you may get some technical things here or there, but just again, the sticking your toes in all these different cultures and coming away with, wow, okay, now I know that's what makes those guys tick, you know? So, so then fast forward to the spring, I had an opportunity with an old friend, Steve Lavin. And Steve Lavin and I met at Purdue when I was a manager. He's a GA back in the late 80s, early 90s. And so Steve now is an analyst for Fox Sports, and he does some things for Turner and CBS during the tournament. And he and I spoke about, I guess, late February about possibly doing some behind-the-scenes metrics analyst, I think was the title I was given, to basically put together many scouting reports from a coach's perspective for the analyst and play-by-play guys. So it started at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, out there, you know, 11 games in 4 days, and just watching every game and basically giving the analyst and the play-by-play guy one or two nuggets for each team that would basically have to play out in order for one team or the other to be successful. And then it was kind of, hey, let's just sit back and let the game tell the story. But hopefully by these seeds that got planted beforehand, you know, whoever's watching at home can say, oh yeah, you know, those guys said that before tip off that, you know, USC's got to find a way to score in a different way other than around the basket, because Arizona plays 2 7-footers that are going to protect the paint. So, so anyway, it led to that. And then Steve had mentioned, hey, I'm going to be going into the NCAA tournament, going to Wichita, I'm going to Boston. Would you like to just keep this going? And so he got permission through the CBS people, and one thing leads to another. And 2 days before the Wichita region, first and second round games, you know, we're sitting in a production room with the CBS people, and normally what they would do is go through individual game tapes, and it would take about 4 or 5 hours to prepare. And we basically boiled down and dumbed down the information to where we could get through all 8 teams in about an hour and a half. So I think CBS people enjoyed it in terms of just the information being presented in a more efficient way. And then we did it once again in Boston for the Sweet 16. So I literally just got back to Indianapolis a couple of days ago. But, you know, it was a total volunteer thing, you know. So hopefully it's something that I'll get to do next year based on what I may or may not be doing. But just an amazing learning experience, and just getting to meet some people on the television side, which is something I've always aspired to want to do when I finish coaching. I'm just not ready for coaching to be finished yet. So, just an amazing experience, just seeing how the TV stuff works behind the scenes.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, and what you're doing is you're giving, right? I mean, you're giving your expertise, and I could imagine that CBS and anyone that's there is, what an advantage it is for them to have you there to give them this insight, and to take 5 hours and to cut it into 90 minutes. And that's a big deal. And yeah, you're going to learn from it. And then of course, then you're going to be able to watch the games too, right? So you had some video, I think right before the Villanova game, where you're like, you know, right there on the court, which is a place that you know very well, but no doubt, no matter when you're there, I think it's an awesome experience. But going back to you just being out there and giving your insight without really expecting anything in return, but knowing that if you do those right things, it's going to lead to good things in the future. And obviously, people that we know and have heard from, you know, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina. You were down here at UNC Charlotte. I mean, you're very well respected here, and that's obvious. And you just play it out in everything that you're doing. So I think that's awesome. You're one of the good guys, and college basketball, unfortunately, has seen, and this isn't the entire landscape of college basketball, but it's had its issues, right? We don't know what the outcome's going to be. We don't know what's true, what's not true. Yeah. We really don't know a whole lot. But at the same time, the media is going to take it. They're going to run with it. What do you see? Are you worried for the state of college basketball? How are you taking all this news that's going on right now?
You know, it's been tough. It's been, you know, when something that you love gets damaged, obviously it's a tough pill to swallow. And obviously things like this have unfortunately been going on for a long, long time. You know, it's just gone from, you know, gym bags and $100 handshakes to more electronic, you know, now as far as how things are, you know, being done. But, you know, I, with so many things still in the air, and even some of the trials not set to begin until next year, you know, I think the thing I'm curious about as much as anybody is, you know, when will it all actually come out? You know, I don't think anybody knows that right now. And I think the people that do know aren't ready to say just yet. So, it's hard to really see how much of it will affect, you know, coaching changes and the actual state of the game, quote unquote, because not everything is out there yet. And so you kind of get the sense right now that, you know, it's a bit of a life goes on type of thing until, you know, further notice. And you hope that the life goes on part doesn't continue to go down as far as some of the things that have happened. But unfortunately, it's a chance that it might until some, you know, true significant, you know, reform really happens. But, you know, the ultimate thing it really is, no matter what may happen with the FBI and the NCAA and all that, the ultimate thing is you can't legislate honesty. You know, I think that's really the crux of the thing at the end of the day, is that you can have as many rules as you want, but you can't legislate honesty. I mean, that's something that's got to come from every person individually that's a part of it. And so hopefully the changes, when they do happen, it'll be positive and it'll be in the best, you know, interest of the game. And because it is special, and obviously this March run here is, especially from a Loyola perspective, and Sister Jean and you know, the purity in terms of how Loyola's pulled it off, that's refreshing. And it's a reminder that, you know what, the game is still pretty special at the end of the day. I mean, even with everything that's gone down, that is as refreshing a story as anything. A 98-year-old sister who just infuses a team with her love and passion and spirit and her pregame prayers and you know, the whole nine yards. So and that's not to take away from anything Kansasville, Nova, or Michigan, but it's almost ironic that you would have a Loyola make that type of run and then win, you know, their first few games by such a, you know, I think two buzzer beaters in their first three wins, and just the way they've done it. And then, you know, amongst the landscape of everything that's happened, it's almost the basketball gods, in a sense, reminding us that, you know, even though the game has its challenges, when special things happen, it reminds you that it's still a pretty special sport.
There's still good people out there. There's still good things happening. Totally agree. It's, you yeah, know, you watch no UMBC, right, upset UVA, and UVA's been nothing but class about that game, about what happened right to them. But then you watch this small school kind of like, who are they? I don't even know if I got their initials right, and if I didn't get it right, I'm sorry. But, you know, it's just all these amazing things that took place in this tournament, like you said, and there are good people out there like yourself, Alan. So with that in mind, you know, here you are, you're doing all these great things for CBS. You have this incredible background at Ohio State and Xavier and UNC Charlotte and Pacific. What's coming up for you possibly with coaching and college basketball next season? I mean, the season's going to end Monday night, probably around 12 o'clock, right? Or 11:59. And then there's a lot of changes are going to be made. I mean, it's the unfortunate state of college basketball. You've lived that experience. And that's just the way, that's life, right? I've been in business where I worked at a job and the next day that entire division was shut down. And it's like, wow, this is a reality. Things can change overnight. So what do you have, though, coming up for you, do you think, in these next few weeks?
Well, I mean, finding another coaching opportunity is definitely on the radar. It's a lot like dating, though, Eric. I mean, it's funny, and I'm sure it's in the business world too. You know, you can wanna date all you want. Someone else has got to want to go out with you.
Yeah, so, yeah.
that's kind of how coaching opportunities go. I would love to have another opportunity, whether it be a, you know, head coaching opportunity, or to be associate head coach or an assistant with someone, or you know, even what I did last year with Ohio State before Coach Mata unfortunately departed, but, you know, player development or director of player development or special assistant to the head coach. I mean, obviously there's different ways to jump back into it. I think the big thing with me, though, even more so than the position, is just being in a great culture, in a great fit, you know, with the right people, and just having a great peace of mind about, who I'm with, wherever that opportunity may be, because, you know, the challenge of trying to beat the other team by 1 point isn't going away. I mean, that's part of it. And that is extremely challenging and difficult. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Duke. I don't care if you're Villanova. I sat courtside by the Villanova West Virginia game. I mean, that rock fight was 10 feet away from me. And just the physicality and the speed and the every possession being a battle. Like, so I know how hard it is to just to try to, you know, where you get someplace, you're just trying to be successful. So that part is hard enough. So you want to make sure wherever you do that at, that you're doing it with people that you can enjoy being around and that you feel great about the culture, just like the business world. You know, there's people that are in great situations business wise, but from a cultural perspective, they may not enjoy who they're with every day. And they, you know, sit in the car for 5 minutes in the parking lot before they go into the building every day, just wondering either, why am I doing this, or what's going to happen today, or do I have to deal with this guy again or this person? So the culture part and the fit part is first and foremost for me, as I kind of look to get back in the profession. But it's challenging, you know, because having not been with a team this year, especially to try to pursue a head coaching position, one of the challenges is that I'm not coming from currently somewhere active. You know, I'm not coming, when I took the Charlotte job, I was coming fresh off a team that had been in the Sweet 16. So that makes it easy, you know, at times to maybe have that next opportunity. Now I'm kind of coming off of a red shirt year, so to speak.
Right. So, but you're fresh now.
Well, I feel great, yeah. But it's someone else, you know, feeling like that's sometimes, I guess to use the phrase sexy, you know, whether it's a search form or an athletic director, it may not be as sexy hiring somebody off of a red shirt year. The fact that I've done it before, you know, hopefully will overcome that. And that's not, that's just reality. That's not to create any blind spots or anything out there, but that's just part of the process. But so yeah, that's something I'm definitely, I mean, movement has already been happening in the profession. A lot of it, obviously Chris Mack going to Louisville and Jeff Capel going to Pitt were huge deals yesterday. So sometimes those things create ripples. Other times if guys just get moved up, you know, at certain places, it doesn't create a ripple. So we'll see. Time will tell. But again, I've had a blast this March in terms of just getting to stay busy with the TV side and also just reigniting a lot of relationships in the past 3 weeks. Because sometimes when you go to a Final Four, you don't really get the sincerity of the handshakes, you know, because there's just so much going on. And the fact that I've gotten to see so many coaching relationships, whether it be from the Pac-12 or any of the teams in Wichita and Boston this last few weeks, it's been genuine, just, you know, unrushed reconnections. I even got to see Torin Dorn, who played for me at Charlotte, because NC State was one of the teams in Wichita. And I got to spend some time with him and give him a big hug and tell him how proud I am of him. So, and he had a fantastic year for NC State this season. So, so those things were just awesome as far as how my March has played out. So we'll see what April brings when April gets here. But so hopefully coaching is in the future. I'd love to take another crack at it and do it again.
Yeah, well, I think you've had the opportunity. You mentioned, you know, the obstacle that you have of not being a coach this past year. But in many ways, you've got to reset yourself. You've got to see it from another angle. You've got to analyze other teams. There's been plenty of coaches, you know, we can think of like coaches like you're at Ohio State, Urban Meyer. He left Florida and there's various reasons why he left and there's a lot of debate around that. And then he was off for a year. You know, he saw it from another angle. He worked at ESPN. But there's stories about even during his time when he was at ESPN, he was on a plane and he was watching video of Iowa State, and the guy next to him says, "Why are you watching Iowa State game?" And he's like, "Because the offensive coordinator at Iowa State is going to be my offensive coordinator when I become a head coach again." And it became the next year.
Right.
But it was those opportunities and those relationships and things that he saw during that time off that led him when he got the next job, right? And he, you know, of course, he had incredible success at Florida. So, but these are obstacles that I think in many ways is a positive for you, where these, you know, you've got to talk to these other people and reset yourself a little bit and see it from another angle.
Absolutely.
So I see it in many ways as a positive. And I would also say this, we're biased because we want you in the game. Wherever you end up, I'm an Ohio State fan. As long as it's not Michigan and I got a Michigan guy in here looking at me right now, we're good. We're going to be your biggest fans.
Oh, you guys are the best, man. I appreciate it. And you're right. I think any profession you do, I gave a talk at a clinic in Raleigh last year, and that was the whole topic of the talk about hitting the reset button and how important it is in whatever profession you're in. There is times where it's healthy to step back and see, you know, what it's like to refresh yourself and take a different perspective. You know, it's like being in an art gallery, right? And you're looking at the same picture. You're just walking to the other side of the room, you know, and looking at the same picture in a different light. So, and Coach Mata is dealing with that now, and I think he's enjoying it. I think he's enjoyed this year, you know, 27 straight years before leaving Ohio State. And now he's lives here in Indianapolis, and you know, he spent a good portion of his life here when he was coaching at Butler. So, you know, gets to see his daughters every day, and I think he's enjoying just taking a breather, and I think he does want to coach again. But much like you asked about Steve Lavin, I think Thad's in that same boat. You know, I think those guys are only going to do it when it's right. They're not going to let any peer pressure or any type of media involvement drag them back into it. I think they're going to do it in on their own terms, that's the best way to be.
That's right. And yeah, I've seen his name come up a couple times with some interviews, and I think we're going to start to see a lot of that noise that you're talking about even from yesterday with the big hirings and all that. So it'll be an exciting time. What, one other thing I want to chat with you about is college basketball and coaching is obviously a priority for you, but what's really cool about what you're doing is you're creating these other ways of doing business, whether you do coach again or don't coach again. And one of them is the analyst work that you were doing for CBS. But the other one is something that you've been working on quite a bit is the Executive Basketball League. And, you know, again, you've only been off for this for not that long, but here you are, and you have these great ideas around working with businesses and teaching a college-style practice for executives, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's something that that's in the seed planning stage right now. I've had some discussions with some people about it, and so it's something in a nutshell. It's called the Executive Leadership Basketball Camp, and in a nutshell, it's a two-hour, you know, college-style basketball practice for executives that still enjoy playing basketball. So as opposed to, you know, a talk in a ballroom with, you know, glasses of water and, you know, some PowerPoint presentation or whatever. This is something for guys that still enjoy the game, that still love to play. You know, that there's no age limit, but, you know, I think that 25 to 45, you know, guys that feel in good enough shape to, you know, to get out there for a while. And basically, in a nutshell, it's taking basketball principles that are directly connected to the business world. And so not only will guys have a great time in terms of playing basketball and learning some basketball principles because they still enjoy loving to play, but you know, the drills that we do in the camp are going to be directly related to the business world. And so they're actually going to have something tangible and concrete that they can kind of take back to their individual worlds, whether it's a group of guys with the same company or various, you know, guys from different companies that all kind of come in camp together, and we choose up teams and do it that way. But so that's something that I've been playing the seeds for with some various people, just Rockwell, a company called Rockwell Automation up in Milwaukee. Hopefully they're close to wanting to do it. A good friend of mine is an exec there, and he's planted the seed. So if you happen to know anybody in the Charlotte area, guys, in the business world, or if you're out there listening and you got an office team that competes in a business league and you want to do something professionally, professional development wise, that's different and it involves basketball, I just need a gym and some willing bodies, and we'll have a blast.
That's it. That's it. Need any 3-point shooters? I'll be there for you. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Hey, remember, coaches like makers.
That's right.
They are makers, too. There's a lot of shooters out there. Coaches like makers, man, too.
The game has changed. The game has changed. I remember when I played, they're like, go to the rim. I was like, no, I want to stay outside behind the 3-point line.
Yeah, no, that 3-point line it's taken over. It's really a big part of both, obviously, the pro game now, and it's bleeding into the college game. I mean, you won't watch a college game anymore with probably less than 43 pointers attempted, you know, by both teams combined. It'd be hard pressed to find it.
It's amazing because obviously everyone's a better shooter now, and they spend more time practicing. And I think it's just but I think the analytics, right? You know, so you come down the court,
yeah,
and the analytics say shoot the three because it's 50% greater than making a 2-pointer, right?
Yeah, basically analytics will tell you a layup in the corner three are two of the highest percentage shots in basketball. The two hardest percentage shots in basketball with analytics, one is the mid-range pull-up, which that's why it's become a lost art because of analytics. But it's also a great shot to be able to make because there's sometimes the defense forces you into that area, depending on the team that you're playing, and you're going to be in that position. So even though percentage-wise it may not be a great shot analytically, everybody's happy when a guy goes and makes one. And then the back to the basket post-up, you know, with somebody behind you and beating up on you, and you're trying to turn and score against the guy in the post. So those are the two lowest percentage. But it's funny, those two lowest percentage ones, sometimes when a game is really sticky, they become unbelievably valuable buckets, you know, when you have a guy that can go get one, either one of those. So to this day, Evan Turner is one of the best mid-range players I've ever been around. It's the first move I saw him make in the high school game, and it was effortless. And he was our 8 seconds or less guy at Ohio State when we needed a bucket, you know, at the, you know, end of the shot clock. And he just had the ability to get a space, and he was 6'7", and he could kind of rise up over people. The numbers have taken over in terms of that. But if you're a maker, we'll take you.
That's right. That's it. Well, it's funny you say Evan Turner, too, because he's made a career of it in the NBA, right? He's still playing today, and he's going to play for a long time because he has the ability to make that shot in, like you said, in an era where it's a lost art right now. So,
yeah. Yeah, this is year 8 for him, and he's going to end up being a 10-year pro before it's all said and done, 10 years plus for sure.
Yeah. Well, Alan, your stories that you brought to us are just amazing. We love hearing them. We know the people that are listening are going to love hearing them. The culture that you talk about, we preach culture here. You're talking about it. There's so much that you say that resonates with us. I'm glad we met. What's crazy is I think it was on Twitter that we first connected, and then we moved it over to LinkedIn and then phone conversations. So, like,
that's right.
Social media is real. Yeah. Like, I try to tell people that. You know, you can build relationships this way. You were talking about business and sports, and it just made me think of, like, wow, this guy is something else. Like, we got to talk. And then we just connected and had good conversations, and here we are. So we're your biggest fans, man. We can't wait to see you coaching again and doing whatever it is that you're going to do. And so we're just real happy that you could join us and spend this hour plus with us doing this podcast, and definitely going to stay in touch. And how could people reach you if they need to get a hold of you?
Well, LinkedIn and Twitter are the two best ways right now. I'm probably most active on those. I'm still, my Instagram game isn't great I'm working on it, but I'd say Twitter and LinkedIn okay. right now. I mean, occasionally we'll post some either motivational things or especially even some business sports, you know, kind of common thread related content, you know, especially for execs and managers and people in the leadership position that maybe like to relay their message in a different way. So having done that, and you know, when you're a head coach, you're in a sense a CEO of a small business. And so it taught me a lot about thinking for the group, you know, and just how you have to kind of have this general, you know, mental unified front that you have to present to everybody, and trying to be creative in different ways to do that. So yeah, Twitter and LinkedIn, I appreciate you guys too. It's been a blast, and lunch on me whenever I get to visit.
Let's do it. Yeah,
hopefully,
we're in.
Hopefully,
man,
I get to get down there this spring.
No, for sure, we'll be in touch, and we'll put in the show notes your LinkedIn and your Twitter. One more thing before we go, everybody's bracket is busted. We're not going to hold you to this. I promise you, I'm going to get it wrong, but I don't know if you can make a prediction. But will you make a prediction of who's going to win the final? Who's going to win the NCAA tournament this year?
You know what? I think it's honestly, it's wide open. I really do. Haven't seen three of the four teams in person over the past 2 weeks. I've seen Michigan up front in close, and they've been on a tear since the Big Ten tournament, really late in the season. I mentioned Kansas's metamorphosis as far as their ability to, you know, go from power ball to shooting threes. And Villanova is just the most battle tested of the bunch because they got guys on the roster with a ring as we speak. And then Loyola, and between those guys and Sister Jean, you know, it's like the Blues Brothers deal. They're on the mission from God, coming from Chicago, you know, probably got the LTD that those guys drove, you know, rolling around in kind of San Antonio somewhere. So I really don't know. I'd love to. I'm not great at prediction business, but my biggest prediction is any four of them could win it.
That's right. I love it. That's the right answer. I love it. Well, Alan, thank you again for the time that you've given us, the stories and everything else. We've really enjoyed it, and we will talk soon.
You guys are the best, man. Appreciate you. Hope to see you soon.
You got it.
Alan, it was absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From the college basketball stories to the lessons in life, we are all better off for spending time with you. The perspectives from Coach Alan Major on finding your true passion and always giving your best are now perspectives you as a business owner and entrepreneur can use for yourself. And for that, Alan, thank you. And for any entrepreneur or athletic director with questions on all things basketball and leadership, feel free to reach out to Alan. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can contact me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or with the same name on Instagram, or you can find us at KazSource.com with links to us on the different social networks. Thank you for listening to our KazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. This podcast exists in large part because of KazCM, the content marketing business inside KazSource, Inc. KazCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at KazSource to you. Learn more by visiting KazCM.com.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.